Salam and good evening to you, worthy friend. Please, please, come closer.
Too close, a little too close.
Hello and welcome to episode 42 of the Disney Brit Podcast for Wednesday the 26th of May 2010. Thank you once again for joining us. Back to our usual style after that Mouse Meets edition of the show, the live show that we brought to you. Well, what have we got on this edition? Two segments for you. Our news and rumours, as always, Juz and Craig. Join me for that as we look at what's been going on over the past couple of weeks in Walt Disney World and in Disneyland Paris. And then we were going to bring back Around the World in 80 segments, but we had a fantastic opportunity that we really just could not pass up. And that is to interview Ridley Pearson, world-famous author, who has written the Kingdom Keeper series, those books set within the Disney parks. He joins us on the show to talk to us about the Kingdom Keeper series, about his adult novels, and also about Peter and the Starcatchers, and just what is in the future for all of those projects. Some really exciting announcements and things coming up from that. So, without any further ado, let's get on with this edition of the Disney Brit Podcast.
Attraction Tickets Direct is the UK's number one ticket provider for Disney, Universal, and the worlds of Discovery Parks. They offer unbeatable prices and expert advice on all the major tickets and attractions in Orlando, California, and Paris. The service Attraction Tickets Direct provides is second to none. Lines are open 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. 7 days a week. Customers receive real tickets, not vouchers, within 7 days. And there are no hidden extras, such as credit card fees or postage surcharges. Now that's what you call great service. Log on to www.attractiontickets.direct.com or call free on 0800-975-0002.
Good morning, sire.
Good morning, Zazu.
Checking in with the morning report.
Fire away.
Welcome to the news and rumours for this edition of the show, and joining me as always is our wonderful ever Craig. Hello, Craig.
Hey, hello, Adam. Hello, Juz. Hello, England football team.
You can't say Juz. Joe, I haven't introduced Juz yet. How do you, don't even know he's here. I'm not coming to you first ever again. Hi, Juz.
But then, if I do not say hello to Juz, he'll say, you didn't say hello to me.
So I'm talking to Juz. Hello, Juz.
I'm not sure I'm bothering. Hello, Disney Poppy, but you always come to me first, and you haven't done, so...
I thought I'd do it as a scene, you know,
no, forget it. Hi, Craig, how are you?
I'm all right, Jazzy boy.
Oh,
not bad.
Good to talk to you, mate. Glad. What should we talk about this evening?
What are we talking about this evening?
No, not you. I'm talking to Craig.
Oh, sorry, Jazzy, I was putting my headphones on. What was
no,
that,
you
my friend?
No, you take time, mate. Anything that you want.
No, I'm okay.
Craig's talking to the England football team, who are currently on Wembley pitch, so I don't know. They can't hear you.
Oh, haven't they got iPods with them? They normally all turn around with iPods. Play it over the speakers.
Play it over the speakers as... okay, we can try that. Anyway, should we do some news rather than just this random waffle that we usually start the show with? We've got some Disney Brit news to start off with. Just a few things to fill you in on before we delve into the Disney news itself. We recently asked people to vote on how they would like to hear the future of the podcast. No funny comments from you two. And we'd like to thank all those people who did respond to that question. We asked whether you wanted the show to continue in its fortnightly slot as it does, or whether you'd quite like us to change it to the format of Iron Orlando, where we have sort of news 1 week, and then we have like a discussion segment or something like that the other week. week. You know, there's been a response from a lot of people, and we thank you for that response. And they've just asked that we continue to do the show as we do, which is fine by me. I don't have a problem with that at all. A lot of people commented on that the show's exactly the right length for them. It sort of does them a good commute to and from work in one show. So there's no plans to change the way the show currently runs at all. We are planning on continuing with our usual segments. Those of you who have sent those really nice comments about Around the World in 80 segments, we are going to continue doing that. We're going to bring back Disney Island Discs as well. We've also got loads of other new ideas that we're going to be trying out also. As well as that, thanks to everyone who came by this past Sunday and took part in our live chat. We had some great fun doing that. I know I was enjoying myself, and Juz and Craig were in the chat room there as well. And we hope that that's going to be a regular thing. And just to let you know, so you've got plenty of time in advance, the next one is going to be on Sunday the 6th of June from 8 p.m. So if you're around Sunday the 6th of June from 8 p.m, we're going to do another live chat. Probably be just over probably an hour and a half, something like that. And we'll just see where that goes. But you guys came in. There was quite a good response from people in the chat.
It was good. Are you going to shave for the next one, though? Make a bit of an effort.
Am I going to shave? I might do.
Make,
I'm trying to do something as well.
Yeah. No, it was good fun. It was funny looking at you.
Thanks.
So maybe we could put the webcam on Harry, and we can all talk to him for an hour and a half. That'd be
okay. That's fine. He's in bed by then. Just came in, made some rude, funny remarks, and then cleared up again.
Standard.
I didn't wait it that much. The cat bit was the best bit. Other than that, nah. Adam gossiping. No, the best bit was that poster behind you.
My poster, what? My Disneyland Paris poster.
Craig proving you wrong.
The cake. See, I definitely bought mine from Disneyland Paris. I even remember where I bought it from. Look, yeah, you bought it from IKEA. I'm guessing I probably paid twice as much for mine as you paid for yours. So I was ripped off.
Mine came with frames as well. So there you go.
Even worse, there you go. And I quite like the other one you've got as well, the Sorcerer Mickey one.
There you go.
Okay, let's head into Disney then and do some Disney news. And Craig, starting off with you, go first. Let's put you in there. So what news you got for us, Craig?
Well, I'm talking of shopping, as we just were, and where to buy stuff. Your favourite shop over in the UK, the Disney Store, and in fact the Disney Store worldwide, is launching a new store design in some major markets across the United States and Europe in the summer. The new store design will be unveiled for the first time in June at the shops in Montebello, California, which is just to the left of Los Angeles, followed by European premiere early in July in Madrid, Spain. 20 new and remodeled Disney Store locations are set to open this year in premier retail outlets throughout North America and Europe. But what was interesting on this, they didn't actually put any in the Orlando area on this. The North American locations are Garden City, New York, Santa Monica Place in Santa Monica, International Plaza in Tampa, Stockholm Street in San Francisco, and Fashion Valley in San Diego. Now, in Europe, it's going to be Spain, Portugal, Italy, and in the UK. In Portugal, it's in Oporto. It's the Araya Centre in Bergano in Italy. And the UK locations are Milton Keynes Centre, Bonacord Centre in Aberdeen, and Donegal Place in Belfast. Now, each new store opening in 2010, Disney will designate a day for a 10% sale, and that will be donated to the Make-A-Wish Foundation in the US, Spain, Portugal, and to Great Ormond Street in the UK.
There we go. I always love giving Craig the bits of news where he's got to try and pronounce words of places.
Yeah, and good job, food. I read it beforehand. Exactly. And that is why you did that to me. I know exactly, Mr. Good Guy.
Has anybody seen any of the stuff related to the new stores?
Nope.
They look absolutely stunning. These are the interactive ones, yeah. I've seen some concept art of this. I was looking to have a bit of a preview of some of the stuff. And you go in and there's going to be like a big castle in the middle. There's going to be an area which is going to have a small cinema sort of type area, which apparently is also rumored to be able to have like web chat or video chats with Disney store, Disney channel stars and things like that. I don't know how they're going to quite work them, but also, you know, it's got these interactive elements in where if you walk past a mirror with a tiara or something like that in your hand, then the princess will appear behind it. There's going to be loads of interactive stuff. Apparently there's going to be no tills. There's going to be a tillless system. People are going to walk around with iPhones or iPads, of which you're going to be able to pay through, things like that. the Apple Store, or the people behind the Apple Store, have also been helping put this new concept store together. Good news for me, Centre MK is only probably an hour away, so I'm hoping to be able to try and get down for the grand opening of that to cover that for the show. But it's nice to see these new stores beginning to appear over the next year, and I can't wait to see what they're going to do with them.
I don't know why they don't open one in Liverpool. We don't really use tills there either.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah. Actually, talking about what you just said, that they're using iPhones and iPads, a bit of kind of hot news that I found out today, they're using iPads now in the Magic Kingdom. Some cast members are walking around with iPads that are kind of there to help guests, and they've got like a big interactive map on the iPad, and they're showing people where to go by pulling up this map on the iPad, showing them where they are and how to get to where they're going to go.
That's so a brilliant idea.
That's incredible. You know, that go to that technology of pieces of paper.
Well, exactly.
Not so you can get lost.
That we print millions of copies of.
Yeah, turn it over, looking for the dining information. It's on the back. You know, it's going on there. That's quite a nice idea. I suppose it gives them an interactive way of doing it. Oh, yeah, does it replace piece of paper? Good point.
You'll get an iPad to go in with.
Take your iPad in with it. Is it? Do you know whether it's sort of like the Mobile Magic application on a larger scale?
Well, it was only cast members that had it, so to be fair, I don't know if it is Mobile Magic or not. But It just seemed to me like a colossal overuse for an iPad, or an underuse for an iPad even.
Yeah, true. I suppose it means that people can use them around the parks rather than... I suppose it does replace a map, though, so I suppose it doesn't really make much of a difference. Is there an environmental benefit by using an iPad than printing off maps, I suppose?
No, because you have to charge it up, don't you?
Yeah, obviously, but I didn't know whether...
You can't buy it in the first place.
Your carbon footprint's probably a lot larger with an iPad than it is for printing bits of
paper. That's true. That's probably true.
So they're killing the environment.
And you can't do what everyone else does, which is you take three iPads, stick one in your back pocket, one in your rucksack, and one in your other pocket for when you lose the other two that you've been walking around all day.
That's true, yeah. That's a very good point. But it would be interesting to see if they begin to use iPhone technology when the Mobile Magic original Verizon thing sort of expires, whether they're going to use it for be able to send you coupons and things like that as you're walking around the park. And it's Mobile Magic, which already gives you the wait times and things like that, that it'll extend to the iPhone for people to be able to use. It'd be quite nice. Right, so we head into Walt Disney World then, as we've headed that way already to talk about iPad. And Juz, what you got for us?
Talk about giving pieces of news to Craig with long words. You give me Small World. Yeah, something that's right up my alleyway, this. It's now listed on the Walt Disney World website as closed refurbishment from August the 1st, my birthday, if anyone wants to know or cares, through to October the 22nd, 2010. So it's really
Which is 5 days after my birthday, if anyone cares.
No, which is
and it's just under a month before my birthday.
I have the power of editing this, so it's just gonna be my birthday, no one else's. Really bad for Adam, because he's out at that time, so he won't be able to go on it.
No,
one of his favorite attractions, it's people of the same size as him. And the only ride where Adam finds it hard getting a word in edgeways, sometimes the animatronics just shut up and just let him talk. There are rumors that some Disney characters might actually be added to the scenes. Like they've appeared in Disneyland and Hong Kong Disneyland, but Disney have denied this is the case. There are also rumours that the entrance and exit of the attraction will swap sides, which might cause some congestion if people forget which way it's going round. New traffic way ahead. And does this have anything to do with the rumoured second phase of the Fantasyland Forest expansion? Who knows? Probably Adam.
Probably me. No, I don't. It is interesting that this is nearly a 3-month refurbishment.
It's
bearing
huge.
In mind what far it's we're not starting off Fun Spa again. Bearing in mind this was refurbed fully, 5 years ago?
Really bizarre.
It's a long refurb, 3 months. So which makes me wonder, it'll take some time to reroute the entrance and exits. But I don't know. I know Disney have denied that Disney characters are coming in, but it wouldn't surprise me. It's gone down really well in Disneyland and Hong Kong Disneyland. If it does go in, to be honest, I don't have a problem with it because it's had such a good reception in those two places. But it does bring up this question to do with this second phase of the Fantasyland Forest expansion. There's rumours. Now, these are not confirmed, but there's rumours that the area behind It's a Small World, where the old Skyway building is, they're going to turn that into the next phase of the Fantasyland expansion. There's going to be a Snow White sort of mine train roller coaster that's supposed to be part of that as well, plus loads of other bits and pieces they're going to put in there. And I do wonder whether moving the entrances and the exits and things like that is going to allow them the space, if they do decide to build this second phase, to be able to reroute down there without any problems whatsoever and build that. But the second phase is pure speculation. It really is rumoured. Disney haven't really confirmed anything about that whatsoever.
They're up to something, aren't they? Because, you know, they did close it for a massive refurb, and this is way too soon again to do anything with it. So something's happening somewhere.
I can't remember, though. I don't know whether you can remember whether the last refurb was just the exterior, the sort of the queue area, or whether they did anything to the ride itself as well.
They tossed it up all the people, didn't they? Repainted all the insides.
They did.
Repainted, yeah.
Interesting then, why it's going to take them 3 months. I'm not bothered about it closing. Zoe, on the other hand, was quite upset to know that It's a Small World's going to be closed when we go.
You can admit it was you. You don't have to, you know.
No, I'm not bothered about It's a Small World.
Pride in your little teeny tiny small world handkerchief.
After hearing Steve and Chris sing it, I think I'm traumatised ever to go on it again.
This is why they're putting them, they're changing, what it changing is. The music.
They're sampling them too, aren't they?
Yeah.
Oh man, that was funny. Okay, let's leave Magic Kingdom behind. We're going to jump on the Tronorail, head over to Epcot, and the Cantina de San Angel has had a name change, or is having a name change. It's not really going to be a cantina anymore. It's a much, much bigger than a cantina. Therefore, the word cantina has been crossed out, and the word hacienda is being put in its place. For it's now going to be known as the Sorry?
That's a nightclub.
Hacienda.
Yeah, the Hacienda. It's a nightclub.
God rest his soul, Tony.
I don't know.
Oh, Anthony Wilson.
He's such a young one, isn't he, Juzzy? He doesn't know about
this. Hacienda was the nightclub that spawned some of the greatest bands we've ever had.
Right, in that case, I'll put a footnote in now. It is not going to be a nightclub. It's going to be known as the Hacienda de San Angel, which is going to be right out on the waterfront, as we know, extending out into the water. It's going to have the counter service and it's going to have a table service location. But Disney have announced that this will be its new name. It's likely now to be reopening as early as late September. So do keep an eye out for that. Still really in line with the Food and Wine Festival. So no doubt Craig's going to be able to go and enjoy this when he's over there on his seventh trip this year or whatever it is. But it is now Hacienda de San Angel. So there you go. Nice quick bit of news from Epcot.
I'm going to get on the decks over there if it's going to be a club.
Yeah.
It's going to be, no, dear.
Fat boy fat on the decks. There we go.
Fat boy fatter.
Shut it, fatty. Right. I'll pop over to Hollywood Studios, shall I? Because the stormtroopers have left. So I'm going to talk to about probably one of the best attractions there, which is Muppet Vision. And it has now reopened. And the good thing is it's had some really positive reviews from fans and guests. The pre-show video has not changed as was predicted, but the pre-show has got some cool flat screens up. But the main kind of refurb was a digital projection system. And now many of the theatre effects have also been fixed and are now working. We've had some people saying that it looks really crisp and sharp now inside. So there you go. Check that one out.
Does that mean that Waldo now looks even more out of place than he did before in a puppet show?
Yeah.
Why does Waldo look out of place?
Because he's digital computer created. I always think it's a weird choice. I understand why they put it in and it's fine. But I still find it a really bizarre character to have in a puppet-centered show.
It's probably the most annoying, isn't he?
Yeah, he is the most annoying.
Still a great, awesome show, though.
Oh, I love it. It's one of my favourite... It's possibly my favourite 3D show and one of my favourite attractions in the whole of Walt Disney World. Yeah. Absolutely love it. And for those of you who listen to or don't listen to WDW Radio, Lou Mangiello about 3 weeks ago now did a walkthrough, a history of what was supposed to be the Muppet Studios. And as part of that, he goes into the history of Muppet Vision 3D and about some of the little clever tricks and things that you can see when you go on it. Seriously, go and listen to that. It's absolutely amazing to hear some of the stuff that's how Muppet Vision links in with everything else.
Yeah, good friend of the show.
Yeah, he is a good friend. We do like Lou. And we should actually congratulate him on his 24-hour show while we're here. Because Lou Mangiello did a live show for 24 hours straight. Insane, but brilliant.
But he didn't understand when I told him he looked knackered. He needed to have that translated to American. I thought it was quite funny.
And also, best wishes to Olga. Those people who are listening know exactly what we're on about. That's it for the for Walt Disney World news, because there really is very little. You may be wondering where the Disney Art of Animation Resort that was built is. We put that on the Iron Orlando show, and we don't like to repeat the same music, same news on both shows. The same news really on both. So Art of Disney Animation, if you don't know about it, new resort being built on the Legendary Years side of Pop Century. It's going to be giant size sculptures, a bit like you've got the All Stars, themed to Cars, Lion King, Little Mermaid, and oh, forgot what the fourth one is. Can anybody remind me?
It's not Snow White, I can tell you that for somebody.
It's not Snow White. Lion King, Little Mermaid, Cars.
And another one. Anyway, it's on Isle of Orlando.
It's on Isle of Orlando. Go and check out.
He said he wasn't going to repeat it, then repeat it. It's like, oh, I can't tell you a secret. Come here, though, quickly.
Anyway, Disneyland Paris news, Juz.
Sorry, yeah, I thought you normally go, we get on the jet and we fly across. And
yes. We've just got on the Magical Express. We've got onto our plane to fly all the way over to Disneyland Paris, where it is lovely and warm and sunny, just like it was in Orlando. And Juz has made it to the resort first and has our first piece of news.
So what's happening? You didn't introduce me first, and you didn't do the aeroplane bit.
P60 will be next, mate.
It's falling apart. P45, happening here. Just let you know that the earnings have been hit by the downturn, which is really strange, because we did say beforehand, about 12 months ago, how well the theme park was doing. Mm. But the earnings at the theme park operator Euro Disney have dropped sharply after the economic downturn hit visitor numbers. In the 6 months from 31st of March 2010, the group's net earnings fell by, go on, have a guess.
I would say, I don't know, 32%?
No, that's not right. Craig, have a guess.
92.5 million euros.
Correct. 95.2 million, which equals 32%. Well done, Craig. Completely right.
Sales. Can I point out, he just said 92.5%. 92.5 million. He got it wrong.
Did I?
No.
He had the number in front of him.
Oh, 95.2. Sorry.
No, he's correct. It's 92.5 net. It's 95.2 gross. So well done, Craig.
Thank you.
And sales were down 7%. Visitors to Europe's biggest theme park, especially from the UK and Netherlands, have dropped by 8% on last year, with fewer people visiting for short breaks, mainly because they're all going to Legoland. On the positive note, Euro Disney managed to squeeze an average of 1% extra out of its guests, partially offsetting the declining numbers. It's really bizarre, this, because we said how well Euro Disney were doing 12 months ago. We couldn't believe how they were staying up. And here it is. They've had a knock-on effect, but later than everyone else.
32% as well. That's a huge drop. But they've had a lot of deals on, haven't they? I wonder whether the... and that's been going for quite a while, but whether the kids stay and play and, for free if they're under seven, whether that'll have had an impact. They've been recently doing things such as up to 40% off, whether that will also have had an impact. It's a shame to see 32%, which is a massive, massive drop.
Yes, it's almost like the deals don't work in Europe like the deals work in America, because they're still getting the same number, but they've offered them a deal.
But interestingly, if you look at this, it said earnings fell by 32% from sales that were only down 7%. So I wonder whether, although there's been a decline in sales, it is all of those offers that means they've declined in their earnings.
Yeah. But it's just a shame, and we thought we were doing well, and they've got a massive debt to maintain, but... They're going the right direction. It's just really bizarre. It's been a long term. You expect local staycations to have kept up, and others been hit, but we've not seen it. I mean, Walt Disney World's decline was only, was it 1%?
About that.
They managed to squeeze extra money out of people. God bless Disney's dream.
Oh, well, hopefully there'll be an upturn to that when Toy Story Playland opens.
Well, it could be the fact that Craig went there and has done nothing but slag off the fence since he's got back.
That's also true. That could also be part of it.
I'd love to think I have that influence. I don't think so. I think their main problem is I don't think you're right. I think discounts don't work over there. I think what they need to do is revisit their kind of peak time pricing, which is ridiculous. And reduce it to a more sensible amount. You know, lower the prices, get more people in, because their occupancy rates are really quite low at peak time still. So that's, I think, what they need to work on. That's what I'd do if I was in charge, and move it to Spain.
Move it to Spain. It's even further away. Then don't want it in Spain, or move it to England. That'd be fine. That'd be fine. Just somewhere
be
like
nicer
that.
In the warmth.
Yeah, okay.
We'd just tax it, wouldn't we, if we had it here?
We'll move it to Spain and we'll move it just around the corner from my parents' villa.
Oh, there you go.
Move it to Spain, right where EasyJet fly in or something like that.
Yeah. Problem solved. There we go. Not that that's ever going to happen, and it's just all pie in the sky. But also talking about pie in the sky, talking about other things that may or may not happen, is Disneyland Paris getting the French Open? For all those of you who follow tennis, you'll know about the French Open. For those of you who don't, it's been going on at Roland Garros since somewhere like 1928, and they have had in place sort of a contract that runs out in 2015. And the Gilbert Serin, I think his name is, I really don't know, who is the general director of the French Tennis Federation, has told a news conference on Saturday that they will be looking for a new home for the French Open as of 2015. Because the capacity of Roland Garros just isn't enough for the so many hundred, well, the hundreds of 450,000 people that visit it every year. So there are two new locations. One of the locations is the 148 acres in Versailles, where the French army are vacating a military base. They move out of there next month. But the other location is possibly going to be within Disneyland Paris. The location obviously is close-ish to the centre of Paris. It's easy to get to for people, and it will also mean that it's in a good place for people to be able to get hotels, for places to stay if they're going to go to the French Open. It's expected to be around February next year that they will make some sort of decision, but Walt Disney World have PGA Classic going on every single October. There is no reason why we couldn't have that French Open at Disneyland Paris. I think it's the last one before, if I'm right, is it the last one before Wimbledon? So it'll be good weather there, so that wouldn't be an issue. But it'd be interesting. I don't know. What do you think? Is this a bad move if it does come to Disney? Is it going to make it far too busy? And is going to affect, again, the price for hotels and make the peak season a little bit longer?
Depends when it is, isn't it? Because if it's a time when schools are off, they are going to charge you the earth for it, even if you don't want to go and watch the tennis.
Yeah.
So it's immediately blocking out people who... But they're going to fill it anyway. From their point of view, they're laughing. From the visitor's point of view, if it's peak time, then you would never go and visit, or you could never afford to go and visit.
Well, the French Open comes in middle of June time, I think. It's usually, it happens just before Wimbledon, so it won't be during major school breaks. But will it mean that it will now be peak season from the middle of June all the way through to August?
Yeah. Craig will be there, I'm sure.
Oh, Craig, what's Craig's words of wisdom on this?
Well, I was just, all I was thinking is, where are they going to do it? They're going to put the kind of court where the ice rink is, and so you don't have the ice rink. Is that where they're going to stick it?
Slightly bigger event than that.
Just yeah, it's a little bit bigger than that, Craig. Yeah.
Anyway, I thought we were talking about golf, so I really don't give a monkey's either way, to be honest.
That's it. That's Gilbert Serin, the general director of the French Tennis Federation, bringing you.
There's no need to answer it, so I'll go on mute.
So, that's true, isn't it, Craig? No, he's muting himself. Okay, heading over to Walt Disney Studios, and Craig's got some news for us. Go on, Craig.
I've just hung up on India ringing. Right, so...
whole of India, all at once?
Yeah, they're all ringing me up, asking why I haven't done any work this afternoon. Right, this is probably a very, very... Well, it's not probably. This is the best bit of news today. Toy Story Playland has an opening date. Thank you. And it is 17 days after Jazzy's birthday. Or 16 days.
16 days.
So it is Tuesday, August the 17th. The date is slightly earlier than expected, but good news is it means soft openings to begin in probably around of August. So all those going over kind of school holiday time and not going to miss out. And Disney, more importantly, will not miss out on the holiday traffic.
Do you think they've done this because they need to get the revenue up, so they need to open it as quickly as possible and make sure they're opening in peak time?
Absolutely. This links in with the other one, doesn't it?
Seamlessly.
Although they have still, can we just point out, they still haven't officially announced Toy Story Playland's coming.
Yeah, I was going to say, has anything been announced? Because we keep talking about this. I presume they've not said a word then.
No, still nothing to say that it's officially opening, but it will be opening on Tuesday, August the 17th.
But if they've not said it, it might not be opening.
Well, it might not really be there. Maybe it's just a figment of our imagination.
Do, 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 do.
I knew that was coming. One little spark. Okay, Juz, our final bit of news. We'll give you the honour this evening of our final piece of news for this segment.
Okay, it's my favourite movie. Ratatouille. After all the rumours of the new Ratatouille, Dark Ride comes to the studios, we have some proof. Well, we may or may not have proof. In the past week, DisneyGazette.fr, for France, have posted photos of some packing crates inside the Toy Story Playland site with the word Ratatouille sprayed on the side in cunning code. This is another piece.
No, it just says Ratatouille. There's no code.
But it might be code for something else, like tins of what? Ratatouille.
Okay, you're right. It could be because it is.
Or it could be something to do with tennis.
Yeah. This is another piece of the puzzle that adds up to a possible new attraction. We now have the application to the town hall office, the prototype salad bowl, and now the crates. Is this a practical joke by a cast member or real progress? ?
What do you think?
I don't know. It seemed really funny that you'd have crates with Ratatouille sprayed on it.
Well, it's right by the costuming building, and it was supposed to be that Toy Story Playland would be directly in front of where the Ratatouille area is going to be. Ratatouille is going to be sort of slightly behind, in between that sort of Toy Story Playland and costuming building area. So in theory, the crates are in the right place to be used. But it's all these little bits of the jigsaw starting to come together now. We've had the application to the town hall office. We've seen that. There's been posts of that on the internet of the plans for that. We've had this prototype dome that appeared on the internet. There was a company in California who'd been commissioned to build these giant domes for Walt Disney Imagineering in California. And we've not heard anything else after them building them. And now suddenly we get these crates that, of course, have Ratatouille on the side. Yes, they could just be crates of tins of Ratatouille. I doubt it. It could also be a practical joke by a cast member. Maybe they've got a can of spray paint and they've just written Ratatouille across the side. That's also possible. But there's a lot of bits and pieces starting to come out about this now, and I'm beginning to wonder whether, you know, maybe there's just a few too many bits and pieces coming about that maybe we're gonna hear something. I don't know whether it's going to be too late for the 20th anniversary, but hopefully for something soon.
Yeah, not seen the film yet. What do you think, Craig? Master of the Universe?
Master of the Universe, I don't think that French people would waste spray cans writing Ratatouille on that when there would be streets for them to spray graffiti all over. So it's either code for something to do with tennis or it is actually coming. Because considering the marketing team at Disney particularly don't give a monkeys about Disneyland Paris, a.k.a. Toy Story Playland announcements.
You've got real down on the French tonight, haven't you? Oh, there's a change.
What do you mean tonight?
Tonight, yeah. I think it probably is something to do with it, but only time will tell what it is. It could just be new ingredients for a restaurant over there.
Well, there's supposed to be a restaurant as part of the Ratatouille sort of area.
There you go. It's the rats for the Ratatouille.
They're going to do a Ratatouille stall outside where you can buy a small pot of Heinz Ratatouille.
Ratatouille.
Okay. Well, Judge, you got to watch the film before you can go on the dark ride. Otherwise, you won't have the slightest clue as to why there are large people chasing after you.
Perhaps that would make more sense if I didn't go on watch the film.
Maybe. You may be right. There you go. That's all our news. I told you it wasn't a huge amount this past couple of weeks. Is he clapping again?
Yeah.
It's the seal.
What's he clapping for now?
Because it's squirrels. The end of the news.
Oh, because we've done the news. Okay. Shall we go and talk?
You can't do anything tonight.
Can you believe it? It's carrying on. Shall we go and talk to Ridley Pearson?
I didn't even do a woohoo.
Okay. This is the end of the news.
Woohoo!
Shall we go and talk to Ridley Pearson?
I'm surprised Craig didn't do the woohoo today.
Oh, woohoo. There you go.
Boo-hoo.
Ridley who?
Ridley Pearson.
Who's he?
Yeah.
Bye.
Flexible, simple, value, secure, honest, and trusted. They are some of the words that people think of when they book their Orlando holiday. And they are exactly the same words that people associate with CompleteOrlando.co.uk. With staff available 7 days a week, there are no better people to use. Contact the Orlando experts on 0800-294-8888. Or visit www.CompleteOrlando.co.uk.
Hello, boys. It's Craig from Liverpool. I'm just phoning in to give a quick review of a book called The Kingdom Keepers, Disney After Dark by the author Ridley Pearson. It's the first of e-books. It came out in 2005. The second one was Disney at Dawn, 2008. And the third one, which came out this year, Disney in the Shadows. Now, I believe they're all set in different parks, but the first one set in Magic Kingdom. It's a fantastical thriller, and from what I've read up to now, which is the first 8 chapters, the leading role appears to be an Orlando-based teenager, Finn Whitman, who wins a dream job within Disney Magic Kingdom. Him and 4 others are Disney Host Interactive, or Disney Hologram Imaging, or DHI for short. And what that is they give virtual tours around Disney as holograms, basically. They did an acting job, and off they go, the minor celebrities in the Orlando area, and their caricatures or avatars go off around Disney, giving tours out to the guests. And he starts appearing in his dreams, or so it seems, at the start of the book, in the Magic Kingdom at night time. And there's a little old man sitting there called Wayne. Now, I'm not sure what his role is yet. At the moment, he's advising and guiding, but he can't see what Finn Whitman can see. And Finn Whitman has seen some pretty strange things up to now, from what I've read up to. For example, he's seen Chip and Dale walking out of the castle. He's Goofy has run past them. Pooh and Tiglet are by the boat ride, just walking along. And then, this is where I've got up to, he encounters some pirates, some animatronic pirates from Pirates of the Caribbean. And they've stolen all the bars from the Buzz Lightyear ride. And it's all about to kick off. It's all getting a little bit ropey. And that's as far as I've got up to. It has got me absolutely hooked. I can't wait to get the second and third books. The only problem is, they're very hard to get in the UK. I don't know about the others, but I struggled to get this one. I couldn't get it from the major retail outlets. I ended up getting it off a third party, one of the main online shops. I took 2 weeks to come, so I don't expect it's out in the UK. But it's for ages 10 and up. I'm 37 and I'm loving it. It doesn't appear to be any more scary than your typical Disney. It's got baddies in it. The baddies are Malice, I can't even say it. You know who I mean. And a group of characters called the Overtakers. So it's very... 5 stars. Thank you very much. Keep up the good work, boys. You're brilliant, and what's his face? I can't remember his name. He's brilliant as well. So, thanks a lot. All right, bye now.
The hallways of Finn's middle school could sometimes feel as long as runways. Late for class, he found this to be one of those times. Steel lockers occupied most of the space between the doors to the classrooms. The lockers were covered with stickers and pictures of movie stars or pro athletes, which instantly distinguished a girl's locker from a boy's. Fluorescent tube lighting cast a sickly glow over everything and made human skin look vaguely greenish.
"He said there was a fable, a story of some kind," Finn said to the boy standing next to him, "that my friends and I are supposed to save the park or something." He realized how ridiculous this sounded. "Whatever that means."
Have you ever thought, when walking around the Magic Kingdom, what it would be like to have the park completely to yourself? Or what it would be like to live there? Maybe you've thought, what happens in the evening and what happens when it gets dark? Have you ever sat on one of those benches on Main Street watching and wondering what else happens there? Or even what could happen if you had the imagination, the dedication and the talent to create a story that lives in Disney World? Well, we are talking to a man who does have that immense imagination, immense dedication, and indeed enormous talent. As tonight we are talking with a legend in my eyes, Ridley Pearson, the author and creator of the Kingdom Keepers series. Ridley, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Adam. I don't deserve all that, but thank you.
No, seriously, you do. I've read the first Kingdom Keepers book. I'll check now. I think I'm on about chapter 8 of the second Kingdom Keepers book. I had all 3 Peter and the Star Catchers books bought for me for Christmas, and I've read the first one of those as well. So I'm well on the way, I can tell you. For those listeners who have not had the chance to read any of these Kingdom Keepers books, perhaps you could just take a few moments to explain, you know, what the story is and the characters that are involved in it.
Yeah, sure. The Kingdom Keepers, as the way the Kingdom Keepers works is, I was leaving the Magic Kingdom one night with my kids and my wife, and I looked back in, and you know, at that hour, everyone is streaming out of the park, and I had one of those Toy Story moments. In Toy Story, when Andy closes his door, all the toys come alive, and I just. In my author's imagination, I wondered, you know, there were all these people leaving the parks, but of course the characters were not leaving. So we were leaving behind us Goofy and Minnie and Mickey and the pirates and Maleficent and Buzz Lightyear and all these wonderful characters, and they weren't coming out with us. They were staying in the park. And I wondered what they did at night when we were gone. And it occurred to me that they probably, knowing just human nature and witchly nature, that they probably were at odds with each other, the sort of good characters, if you will, against the wonderful Disney villains. Walt Disney had a terrific eye for villainry, and that they would be battling inside the park for domination of the park. They might be jealous of each other, wanting to sort of sabotage each other's rides or whatever so that people would come on their ride and not the other person's. And I could see all this sort of wonderful craziness and conflict going on in there. And it created in my mind a little world. And I thought, wow, you know, all of us would love to sneak into this park after dark. And what would we find when we climbed over the wall? So that was really the genesis of it, and the Kingdom Keepers explores that world. There are 5 teenagers who are actually holograms, and I can go into some of that as we go on, and they are at odds with the Disney villains who would like to take over the parks and really corrupt them because they're sick and tired of them being so sweet and magical. And somewhere in these parks are probably the good characters, the Minnies, Mickeys, Goofies, Daisies, Donalds, although early in the books we don't see them. They're going to actually start to come out now. I'm on book 4. So it's just a new world, and it's, for me, a real fun one.
Cool. You kind of answered one of my questions I was going to ask anyway, but to touch on the fact that, I mean, you're a well-known author beforehand with great titles like Undercurrent and Chain of Evidence. Was this a case of, was it unnerving to have such a big change to sort of go from that side to look at something which is Disney-kid orientated, really?
Well, it was a logical progression. I will try to abbreviate this story if I can in some way, but I am in a rock and roll band with Stephen King, Amy Tan, Dave Barry, Scott Turow, Greg Iles, Roy Blunt Jr., Mitch Albom, and we play really terrible 50s and 60s rock and roll. to raise money for good causes. And so I've made close friends. We've been doing this 18 years, and I've made friends with all these guys, and especially Dave Barry. And I was late in life with children and heading to Disney World for my first time. I was not a Disney person. And Dave Barry, who lives in Florida, said, well, if you're going to Disney World, I have to go with you because I know everything there is to know about Disney World. when you get to know Dave, you realize he knows everything about everything. And I said, well, terrific. And I was published on my crime side at the time by a division of Disney, a thing called Hyperion Books. And I contacted Bob Miller, the then head of Hyperion, and said, I'm going into Walt Disney World with Dave Barry. Is there anything you can do for us while we're there? And I just had no idea what I was in for. And they treated us like royalty when we got there. They gave us our passes. They had cakes in our room made out in edible cover art. Wow. They gave us a VIP guide to tour us and our kids through the park. So we jumped all the lines. We went in the back door of Mickey's house. We just had the most incredible time. And at the end of all of that, I got back and thanked him. And he said, you know, you really need to thank Disney Books. That's who set it up. And I had this conversation with Disney Books about what an incredible, first, how wonderfully they treated us. But secondly, that each time I went on an attraction as a story person, I saw a beginning, middle, and end to every attraction. I could sense that there was really the consideration of story in the creation of these attractions. It wasn't just all glitz, glamour, lights, flashy stuff. There was a story we were being led through. And the editor I spoke to at Disney Books, you know, said, oh, that's so observant of you. There's this group of people called the Imagineers. They spend all their time creating these attractions and doing years of research. And you're right, there are all these stories involved with each of these attractions. And we went on and yammered some more. And I said, you know, if there's ever anything I can do for you. And she said, well, there is. Have you thought about writing for kids? And that was really the first departure from my crime writing into this world of young adult fiction. And she was looking for a thriller that could be set inside their theme parks, but that could be approved by their own Disney attorney. And Disney attorneys are sort of notoriously harsh. For instance, I was supposed to somehow come up with the idea of a thriller that would have no harm come to children, no problems inside the parks, no sabotage of the rides, no crime set inside.
Oh my goodness.
And I went, oh my goodness, that's my kind of challenge. And so I set off on this rather ambitious quest to figure out how one could write a thriller inside Disney's parks without actually any harm coming to anything. In the meantime, my daughter and I were reading Peter Pan, the great British classic written by J.M. Barrie, and she covered about page 5 with her hand and said, Dad, how did Peter Pan meet Captain Hook in the first place? And again, my writer's light went off in my head, and I went, wait a second, how come that boy can fly? Why does he never grow old? Who's the little personal assistant he travels around with? Where did she come from? What is this, you know, where a person can detach from his shadow, and why would you want to? There were all these wonderful unanswered questions. And it happened that a week later I was, happened is in quotes, a week later I was playing with our terrible rock band in Miami and staying with Dave Barry. And I mentioned to him this idea of a prequel to Peter Pan. And he and I decided we would embark on this together. So that's sort of the genesis of all of this and how this world of writing for kids opened up out of my adult world, but ended up also encompassing this rock and roll world I was in. And it all got mishmashed and rolled into a single pie. And here we are.
I think you're doing yourself a little bit of a disservice when you talk about children's writers, though, because you're currently talking to a nearly 30-year-old and a man in his 40s and a man getting close to his 40s who are all currently reading Kingdom Keepers. So, you know, when you say children's writing, I suppose children at heart is about right. And the same with your Peter Pan as well. You know, when I first started to read Peter and the Starcatcher, and there was this boy, Peter, who was just on a ship, who had no magical powers, nothing. And I was reading it thinking, how on earth are they going to do this? How on earth are they going to make it plausible? Are they going to make it so that it fits in with the original story? And one of the things I really like about Peter and the Starcatchers is that you don't give anything away too soon and you don't give too much away too soon. And I finished the first one and my Kingdom Keepers 2 arrived and I was torn between, do I read Peter? Do I read Kingdom Keepers? I'm not quite sure which to go with next because they are such good books. And you sort of mentioned about Dave Barry. You've mentioned about the conversations and that you've been, he lives in Florida. He's been to the parks and he's almost the sort of guy who could be really useful to you for writing Kingdom Keepers because he is so close. Did Dave want in on Kingdom Keepers, on the concept, or did, you know, he say, hey, this is your idea, run with it and see where you go?
He would be terrific on this, Adam. In fact, I think what happened is because the Kingdom Keepers came first, he knew I was already working on that. And what happened was I came up to solve the riddle that I had been presented with. I don't know if you're familiar with Pal Mickey, but for years there was this little sort of doll you could carry along.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
And I thought, how would Disney update that? And I thought, you know, in this day and age of technology, they'd do some kind of host, some kind of person that greeted you. And I happened to see at the time something that you can get on the internet, which is one of these sort of salad bowl dishes that projects a hologram up above it. It's a very small dish and it can only handle a tiny image like a coin or a strawberry or a blueberry. Mm-hmm. But it will project it right above this dish without any electricity, it's just a daylight hologram image maker. And it's absolutely convincing. It doesn't look transparent. It looks absolutely solid, just like whatever is in the bottom of this thing. And it happened that all of this came together at the same time. And I thought, what Disney would make are these five teenage kids in the hologram. Mm. And when you drive to the gate of the park, the holograms greet you and show you into the park. Mr. Pearson, would you like to go to the Haunted Mansion today? And off you go, but your kids can walk right through this character if they so choose. And how fascinating that would be. And so Dave knew I was already working on that project, and in fact, I included him on some of the research for these books because my only caveat to the company was I really can't work on these books unless you give me full access to your theme park. And of course they were very hesitant. They had never offered that to anyone before, but sure enough about 3 weeks later they called and said, okay, you've got it. We're sending you a VIP pass to our parks. You can go to any property and if you call in advance, a month or so in advance, we will arrange for you to do whatever you want to do in those parks. So on these different occasions, now about 12 times, I've been able to go to the parks and go in at 5 in the morning and enter these attractions when they're closed and study. And then the employees come and I talk to them about, you know, how they run them, what goes wrong, what's interesting about them. And then I ride them several times, both when they're not on, in other words, no lights, no animatronics, no music. And then they gear all that up and I ride them with them fully running. And then all the people show up and I ride them with guests. And in the books, I really just put the Kingdom Keepers, these five kids as holograms, through the paces of what I've done as research. And that's what makes them so fun for me, and I hope so much fun for the reader, is what these kids encounter are totally plausible because it's what I've encountered with an active imagination while on these attractions.
I think, Joe, do you want to share a couple of stories? I know you were able, I think I remember hearing an interview way, way back when the first book was first out about you going backstage at Pirates. And there's also an It's a Small World story as well, I think.
Yes, and all of these show up in the books. And Pirates, which was one of the first attractions I visited, the animatronics, which is, for your listeners who don't know, are the sort of robotic-like mannequins that move. Mm. They look incredible. Human or animal-like, but they actually have motion in them and they have voices or song or whatever. All of that is turned off when I first go into Pirates, as are the lights. It's just under emergency lighting. And we reach that part in the Pirates attraction where you're in the bay and there normally would be a cannon battle between shore and the frigate, which is Captain Blackbeard, or now called Captain Barbossa, following the movies. And I looked over and saw Barbossa. I saw this incredible character up on the frigate, and I said, can you stop the ride and allow me to go up onto the frigate? And my Imagineer friend said, Ridley, we're supposed to let you do whatever you want to do. So they shut the boat down, and I went up into the catwalks and got backstage up onto the frigate with Barbossa. And what dropped my jaw was that he has human hair glued onto his arm. He has scabs, warts. He has bruises, red eyes, bloodshot eyes. He just looked entirely and enormously human. And I really needed to know why Disney would go to that expense. And what they told me was, because I realized, you know, this detail wasn't something you could see from the distance of the boat. And they said, yes, but Ridley, if it wasn't there, you would notice. And that was really sort of eye-opening for me, that Disney goes to the extent and trouble to present what we would see by not seeing, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah, completely. It does.
It fascinated me that they go to that expense and trouble. Mm. And of course, they're right. I mean, if the hair wasn't there, it would just look like a mannequin moving back and forth. What convinces you is all this detail that, in fact, is so small you can't see it. But if it wasn't there, you would see its absence.
Ridley, I think for many of us, you've kind of had a dream experience in working so closely with Disney, and you've been great in telling us kind of the support they offered you. But did they give you access? I mean, you're a storyteller. Did they give you kind of access to their storytellers, to the Imagineers, and you know, were you able to explore lots of different kind of ideas with them and use their knowledge of the parks and their history and their backstory in the books? Or were there certain things you kind of weren't allowed to ask and dig deeper on?
The Imagineers have been a phenomenal underline exclamation resource for these books. They, and what's been really fun is, as the Kingdom Keeper lore has now spread through the system, the Disney Corporation, because more and more people, including, I'm told, even the head of Disney, have now read some of the books, more and more doors have opened up to me, and it's just so exciting. But the Imagineers have provided me with, for instance, access to Maleficent, the cast member who plays Maleficent, who has done years of study to be able to play that role. And Maleficent has read the books and is able to say, you know, really, you're off here, and you'd be better moving here and in this direction, and my powers are more. And this Disney lore is so, as you guys I'm sure know, is so deep and runs like a vein through the marble. And I honestly didn't know what I was tapping into when I got into this world. But there are just devotees out there. And as I get more and more access to them, I learn more and more about this world I'm creating. And it's all good. It all helps and informs the novels that I've...
Wow. You've got three books at the moment in this series, of which I'm plowing my way through. You've mentioned you got your fourth on the go. We've heard rumours that there could be 10 books. I mean, is this what you've planned? Do you have these stories already in your head and you know how many books are going to be and what's going to happen to the DHIs? Or where do you stand at the moment, or what can you tell us at the moment?
Yes, I had a five-book series plan, and I had it... I'm a big advanced planner, so I had it outlined and flow-charted and... all, you know, interconnected and interlaced, at which point Disney came to me and said, look, we really want this to be at least 6. And I said, okay, you know, I will make it at least 6 books, but I really need to know how many books this is, because I don't want to write fluff. You know, every book has to have meaning. It has to carry the story. It has to move our characters forward. So, you know, don't ask me to write my 5 or 6 and then tell me you want 4 more, because that this series, I want the series to end logically and in a wonderful place. And so that's where we are right now. We're at 6. There are some really wonderful franchise opportunities that Disney is exploring, some of which may come through. You know, who knows? I'm not as convinced, so we'll just see. But I think basically we're all in a wait and see pattern on this. I'm planning to start the second to last book in about a month. I'm just today I'm writing the second to last chapter of Kingdom Keepers 4.
Wow.
So, you know, 5 should start, 6 should follow. If it's going to be 10, I need to know soon. Because what I've been doing is pushing off the last 2 books that I know for sure close the series, and I injected this 4th book into it, which works fine. It fits in with the overall story. I hope it's as exciting for others as it has been for me to write it. But I really insist that this be a closed arc series. You know, it has a beginning, a middle, and an end. So we'll see.
Now, your book 1, which is virtually done now, is Magic Kingdom. I know book 2 is Animal Kingdom. And number 3 is Epcot. I saw your YouTube video about that. Where's the other 4 and 5 going to be set then?
Well, book 4 that I've just written is again Epcot and Disney Hollywood Studios. Epcot is just so huge and fascinating me that I couldn't leave it alone. I also expand in 4 the world of Orlando and the kids at school. A technical change is underway, and if you go on to thekingdomkeepers.com, a brand new website Disney has created, the people who created the site had several meetings with me, and they seemed most interested in book 4 and this technical event that has happened. And really, that if you read between the lines of that site and the game on that site, you will figure out where book 4 is going, at least what the technical change is. And then logically, for me anyway, logically, the 5th book in the series will be what the 4th book was going to be, which is on the cruise line.
Fabulous.
With everyone being able to move from the East Coast to the West Coast, and the last book will be on the West Coast.
Okay, now, that sounds great.
Should we expand to 10 books because these franchise opportunities open up, then I believe, I don't have Disney behind me on this yet, but I believe the most probable place for these to go to is Disney France, Disney Japan, and Disney Hong Kong.
If cool. You need help for research, Disneyland Paris, I'm putting my name forward now.
Yeah, I was going to say, your research tricks.
You talk about the website. When I was looking at some of the videos that you put up, and you talked about thekingdomkeepers.com, and I just literally got in from school. I got a load of work to do, and I thought, well, I'll just have a quick look. And then 2.5 hours later, I'm still on the website trying to play those games, trying to complete some of those levels, because some of them are really difficult. And I just got completely carried away in this sort of extension, this immersive experience that Disney has created. Can you just give us a little bit more information about what thekingdomkeepers.com is all about and how it links in with the books?
Yes. I mean, I became fascinated with something called transmedia. And I would really like to, as we go forward in the Kingdom Keepers experience, move as close to transmedia as we can get, which means that the books will tie into the website, or maybe a multitude of websites. The websites will refer you back to books. If we get movies, there'll be that. If we get an in-park experience, that will be part of this. I love the idea of a world that is not limited to just books or just websites, but we bring all that together. And that's the idea that the developers of the website and I have worked on, is how can we make this an immersion, a place where you go into a world and you find out some clues on the website that actually refer back to the book. And when you get in there, it refers you deeper into the website, and suddenly a video opens up and you see me backstage at a place that you could never go in the parks, but now you've won the right to go there. And just, you know, making it as big and fun a world, as immersive a world as we can make it.
Cool. Just to pick up on the sort of the world of virtual world and games world, reading through book number 1, you go into great detail about VMK, which is something my kids love to pieces. And I was curious by the way you were detailing it. Did you actually get yourself into this yourself? Because the way you talk about it, I thought you've been playing this game a while by the sounds of it.
Oh, I loved that game, as did my kids. And I was, I had fully written it into the 2nd book when they closed it. And so we had, if you want a nightmare, with 8 days to go before the book went to press, we found out that VMK was being closed down. Had it the whole book with this 8-day window closing in on me, so that it could still be explainable in ways that didn't include VMK. And we got that handled. And in the process, I had already created the virtual maintenance network in that book and expanded in the book 3 and now expanded further in book 4 because I'm fascinated by the idea of a virtual way for these Imagineers to control and work on the attractions without having to get out of their beds and go down to the parks. And in fact, such a thing exists. It doesn't exist at the level I've created it, and they haven't yet shown me exactly what it is, but I've heard from Imagineers that there is such a thing. There is a way to sort of dial up access to the Magic Kingdom on their park. And we'll see if I ever gain access to whatever is there. But all of that is a part and parcel of this world.
Now, Ridley, I must admit, I do read your blog, and one of the things that I did see on there a while ago was you said that the Kingdom Keepers were submitted to Disney for a film, I think in August 2006, and then again in July 2008. I mean, can you tell us what the latest on this, with the huge success of, you know, the Harry Potter films and the Twilight films? There's certainly, you know, in my mind, a market for these sorts of adventure type films, and, you know, one being based on Disney would just kind of be pure magic. Is there any progress on that, do you know?
Yours and mine both. I just keep seeing these as films, but as of now, we don't have an option or a deal with Disney. They have expressed interest. They have, as you know or may not know, the studios have been in some change lately.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that has, I'm sure, delayed things. They have been incredibly receptive to me. I've met with the new head of the studio. And many of his executives on separate occasions, they've invited me out to the studios. So I don't rule it out. I think that we were all waiting to see what would happen with the third book. The third book has taken off and is selling in really big ways, and I think Disney needed to see that. So, you know, you just never know. And we're sort of, you can't say we're in constant talk with them because that's unfair to them. We revisit the idea with the studios on numerous occasions, and those doors are certainly not closed, but it's not as if we have an ink deal on the table.
Also, Peter and the Starcatchers, I know there was, was it Philadelphia, they've had the stage show which they've been working on, is that right?
In La Jolla, California.
Sorry, California, yes. That's right. And how has that gone?
It is unbelievable. Rick Ellis, who did The Jersey Boys, co-wrote The Jersey Boys, wrote the book for it. And Dave and I were invited to various phases of development, including the third or fourth phase, which we both attended, out in La Jolla, California, where they workshopped it for 4 weeks in front of live audiences.
Paying wow. Money.
And it's simply brilliant. It is not a musical. It is not what you would think of as a Disney stage production. It is not colorful. It's not all sort of whip-a-doo-doo. It's serious theater, but for kids and for adults, it's like Nicholas Nickleby. It's dark in places, and the costumes are drab. The entire set props consisted, when I saw it, of, I think, two ropes, a ladder, and three chests.
Not oh, wow, okay.
And it is simply brilliant. The experience is incredible. You come out jumping for joy. There is music in it. There are 4 or 5 songs. I believe they're going to be 6 or 7. And the good news that I'm now legally allowed to announce, which I haven't been able to for months and months and months, is that it is to open off-Broadway in March of 2011. And it's
fantastic.
Wow.
Congratulations on that.
It's really, really exciting.
I'm the head of a drama department here in the UK, and when I read through Peter and the Starcatcher and I knew that they turned it into a stage performance, I was constantly trying to work out how they would do it. And, you know, and you've just, obviously, it was very minimalistic, it's very simple. But if they're turning it into a stage musical, I can tell you now there will be drama teachers all over the world who would clamour to get hold of that to do at their school. And I would certainly be at the front of the queue for that. Sorry, you were going to say?
You would know that I don't know enough about theater, and I'm sure you do. But what's so fun about this is that it's an ensemble cast of, I think, 12 or 14, and everything is done inventively. They take a piece of rope and point it one direction, and it's one of the ships. And when they point it the other direction, it's another of the ships. And they all change hats, and they're all different people on those ships.
Fantastic.
So when I first saw it, I thought, the kids are never going to follow this. But, of course, kids are way smarter than we are. They had no problem with any of this. And the music, the four or five songs that are in it, don't advance the story, but do help the story. And are fun and funny. And the characters are over-the-top exciting and interesting. It's just phenomenal theater. And I think Disney in this country has come under some criticism for the spectacles they do. You know, they launch these multi-million dollar, colorful, crazy technology theatrical spectacles, which I happen to love. But because they're Disney, you know, they always take flack. And I think what we may find is that even the critics see this and go, my gosh, this is theater in the raw. This is theater as it's supposed to be. This is just wonderfully fresh, and see something take this angle on a production. So we'll see.
And is there any news on that possibly turning into a movie?
Yes. I mean, the word is, and I can't say for sure because who knows, but what Disney has expressed to us is an interest to take this off Broadway and then on to Broadway.
Yeah.
If it's on to Broadway, they will then tour it, and they will also begin production of three films.
Fabulous.
So, you know, if everything goes right, yes, and you just have to kind of cross your fingers at each stage. But I can tell you that working with Disney Theatrical has been one of the most educational, eye-opening, fascinating things I've ever been involved with. These people are brilliant. They only work on a few projects at a time. They work laboriously on the projects. They take their time to get them absolutely right. And it feels to me as if that will be the case with our production. They have been amazing.
Absolutely fantastic. I look forward to seeing the films. And if I'm over in New York, certainly seeing it on or off Broadway, that would be absolutely amazing. Let's just nip back to Kingdom Keepers briefly. Now, I heard a rumor. You've talked about there being a website. You've talked about, you know, trying to push through films. There's more books coming. I've heard a rumor of possibly in-park events, activities happening linked to the Kingdom Keepers books. Is there anything you're able to tell us about that possibly happening?
I've heard the same rumors. What I can tell you, what I'm allowed to tell you, is that we are right now in the throes of developing an educational tour inside perhaps all three parks, Magic Kingdom, Animal Kingdom, and Epcot, where, say, 30 kids from a school in England or in Minnesota could fly to Disney World and spend a day or two in an educational Kingdom Keepers-based tour of the parks. So you would work with a booklet that would take you through quests and challenges and puzzles. You'd have to use English skills, math skills, science skills, but when you completed a page, you would be rewarded with front-of-the-line fast pass into Test Track and might see something special in there when you were in there. And then you move on to the next phase. So there's that component. There is also something else under development, but again, I'm just not allowed to talk about it because I think they feel the odds of these things ever happening are so small, they don't want to get the public excited about it.
No, that makes sense. That definitely makes sense.
Should it ever come to fruition? And I'm told that we will know within the next 30 to 60 days. I've been told that now for about 90 days, so we'll see. like we're getting closer to a yes or no on something.
That certainly sounds exciting, and you know, the fact that you're giving something educational back, and Walt Disney has always talked about this idea of edutainment, and that's exactly what it is. It's that edutainment.
Yep.
Fabulous. As long as they can get up into the castle and they can go and try the disappearing stairs and the black and white tiled floor and all of those things, that'd be fantastic. But, you know, Ridley, seriously, I've got to thank you for... there are several books that have been written to do with the Magic Kingdom. Cory Doctorow wrote one, which is very science fiction based, and I enjoyed it, but it was a little difficult to read. There's been some other unofficial Disney books that have come around, and for years and years, I have been absolutely desperate for something a little bit different to do with Disney I could read, and Kingdom Keepers just fills that void absolutely perfectly. They're just such fantastic books to read, and you've clearly hit gold with these. You know, they are wonderful stories. There's some absolutely beautiful storytelling in there, and the concepts are just fantastic. You know, you've converted your way of storytelling almost to that Disney way, and you are now really part of that Disney family with the access and the things you're allowed to access and enjoy. And we just want to thank you now for the time that you've obviously given us today, the time that you've given to write these books, and you're still continuing to write these books. And also a massive thank you for sending over a complete set of the Kingdom Keepers books, which you have signed. And we are currently supporting a charity here in the UK called Dial a Dream, who are a UK-based charity that grant wishes and dreams to children with terminal illnesses. And we've been trying to raise as much money for them. And those books that you sent over, those signed books, we are going to auction off for charity and give the money straight to them. And unfortunately, as sad as it is to say, the Kingdom Keepers books aren't as freely available in this country as we would like them to be. And we have, you know, struggled in the past to try and get hold of those books. So to have those as a great prize is fantastic. So we'll announce those on our Facebook page and our forum and all those sort of things. But Ridley, just a huge, huge thank you for coming today. People can go over to your website. Is it ridleypearson.com and find out more about not only your children's books, but adult books as well?
You're so kind to say all that. Thank you so much. And I love the fact that you're supporting a good cause. I believe in that. And we will help in whatever way we can.
Fabulous. Well, Ridley, I'm sure the other guys want to say thank you just as much as I do. But thank you for coming on, and thank you for sharing with our listeners just how the Kingdom Keepers process has come through and come to fruition as it has.
Thank you, Adam, so much.
Yeah, I just want to say thank you, but write a bit slower because it's taken me a while to catch up with the number of books I've written.
And I wanted to say thank you for making my little girl very, very happy, because she wanted to get these books when we were in America and we couldn't get them. And so for helping us out over here and for answering my email and for coming on the show and sharing it with us, Ridley. So thank you very much.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it. I hope we can do it again.
Love it.
Thank you, Ridley. Thanks. Well, that rounds up this edition of the show. Once again, thank you for joining me, and I thank, as always, our sponsors, Attraction Tickets Direct and Complete Orlando. Find them at attractiontickets.co.uk and completeorlando.co.uk. Thanks again to Juz and to Craig for joining me, as always, and a massive, massive thank you to Ridley Pearson for coming onto the show today and to tell us a little bit more about the Kingdom Keepers series, about himself, and about the Peter and the Starcatchers. Find out more about him at www.ridleypearson.com. Find out more about the Kingdom Keepers series at www.thekingdomkeepers.com. Some great games, information, videos, all sorts of stuff over there that you can go and enjoy. Also, www.peterandthestarcatchers.co.uk and peterandthestarcatchers.com are two websites to go and find out more about the Peter and the Starcatchers series. If you want to send us emails, questions, comments, suggestions, anything like that, please email us at podcast@disneybrit.com and we'll reply to those emails. You can, of course, still ring our voicemails. Thank you to Craig for doing that. Ring our voicemails at 0121 288 2858 for the UK and 407 545 7980 if you're in the US. Make sure to check out our Disney Brit website, www.disneybrit.com. It's had a bit of a makeover. We put some more different features on there as well, and that website will continue to grow over the next few months. So disneybrit.com, visit us there. Check out our Facebook pages and our Disney Brit fan page. You can go over and check out our pages for our new Mouse Meets page for 2011, the Disney Brit fan page, our fan page for our books, also our Disney political page of the Disney Way, which we've got over there as well. You can friend up myself, Juz, or Craig, and of course leave us a review on iTunes, and thank you to all the people that have done that recently. Really is a great help. Our YouTube channel still over there, Disney Brit Podcast is our YouTube channel. There's some videos starting to appear on Mouse Meets from some horrific singing on karaoke stuff that wasn't even revealed on this podcast, I'll have you know as well. You can still buy copies of the Minnie Mouse from Amazon in the US and the UK, as well as at Waterstones, Borders and WH Smith's. And check out our sister podcast at Eye on Orlando. Please go over and check that out. We release those every single week now. You can visit our forum, disneybrit.com/forum, and join us over there for some chats and discussions. Loads of really good stuff going on. And, well, that's really it. It leaves me with nothing left to say other than the next show will be on Wednesday, the 9th of June. So until then, I'll see you.